I think I'm cheap.
Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Thrown like a star in my vast sleep, I opened my eyes to take a peek, to find that I was by the sea, gazing with tranquility. Just then when the hurdy-gurdy man came singing songs of love. Then when the hurdy-gurdy man came singing songs of love.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to Hurdy Gurdy Songs. This is your Hurdy Gurdy man, Jorge, bringing you music about truth. And today we will be focusing on Black History Month, final episode, although I am actually going to continue Black History Month for the next 11 months, on and off, because we've just touched upon very little of what I want to get to. The past few weeks we've been dealing with primarily with music of African American men, issues around African American men, and the hurdy-gurdy songs written by, for, and sharing a variety of approaches to this issue of Black history. In any case, today we're going to focus on an individual who I knew very little about until my good friend Douglas Yeager, who was Josh White's manager and works with Josh White Jr., his son, on a train ride back to New York City, shared an incredible tale. That's why today's program is The Ballad of Josh White. And hopefully Douglas will call us in a little bit later today in the program. But I want to get to the music right away because this is a singular artist that is an artist for our times. Probably all times. Truly a hurdy-gurdy man. Not just a storyteller, singer, songwriter, guitarist, but actually someone that can speak to an entire series of personal trials, tribulations, struggles, victories, defeats. It's an incredible life, and I want to get right to the music with his track Jim Crow Train to start us off today. Jim Crow Train, Josh White, please.
The trains, I can ride this train.
Stop Jim Crow so I can ride this train. Stop Jim Crow so I can ride this train. Black and white folks riding side by side. Hear that train whistle blow. Can't you hear that train whistle blow? Can't you hear that train whistle blow? Oh Lord, this train is Jim Crow.
Jim Crow train. But now let's get back to his early years. This is when he was yet very, very young, performing and traveling with Mean Blind Joe Taggart from the album Mean Tempered Man.
Yeah, drinking all the whiskey and beer. And if you get at the deacon about it, well, the deacon tell you he don't care. Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Call that religion?
No, no.
Look down in Santa Fe. We got some men in this world. They claim to be your friend. They'll go with you, laughing, grin, trying to take your wife right then. Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Look down in Santa Fe. Dipping snuff, you got to quit. When you get to heaven, you got nowhere to sit. Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Down in Santa Fe. Well, you watch that old man, you watch him today. Down throat, sticking his crutches away. Telling you young men what to do. And he's out for young women just as well as you. Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Down in Santa Fe. You yell that preach is preaching. He's seen a preach mighty sweet. But the reason he don't believe in holiness, he wanna quote every woman. Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Do you call that religion?
No, no. No.
Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Down in Santa Fe. Well, a preacher will come to your house. He'll come with a sniggle and a grin. I just want to know, sister, how long for old man coming? Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Look down in Santa Fe. I sit one down by my fire, thought it was treating fine. But when I turned my head around, that preacher drank up my wine. Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Do you call that religion?
No, no. No.
Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Look down in Santa Fe. Preacher will come to your house, he ought to come back to preach. But when you come to find out, he came back. You invite him in your dining room. You try to treat him well. You sit and write down to your dining room table. You give your chicken tail. Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Do you call that religion?
No, no.
Just count it down a day.
Scandalous and a Shame. That's a very early track, Chicago, on Paramount Records in 1928. This was 14-year-old Josh White's first lead vocal and lead guitar. You could tell that he had a predilection, a natural talent for the guitar already at that age. And bear in mind, he picked up the styles from Blind Blake, Blind Man Arnold, Blind Joe Taggart, individuals from whom he learned, but was also because of where he came from, Greenville, South Carolina, very much impoverished, abject poverty. He, as a very young boy, was out on the road and basically being the hand boy to a lot of these amazing mentors, but nonetheless, who did not treat him very well, to say the least. In any case, this is his training ground. And then the opening track, we heard a more mature Josh White. Of course, this is now in the 1940s, when you can hear the masterful guitar technique. Anyone that can create that sound portrait of a train on a guitar, you know, it might be easy on a harp, a little easier on a harp, but on a guitar, it's not an easy thing to do. And this is some amazing testament to Josh White's talent. We're just scratching the surface here. Staying on with the religious theme, although that Scandalous and a Shame was somewhat pointing out the hypocrisies. This next track, let's listen to Jesus is Gonna Make Up My Dying Bed, and a couple more tracks from Josh White.
Time of dying, I don't want nobody to mourn. All I want my friends to do, come and fold my dying arms. Well, 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 so I can die easy. Well, 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 Jesus gonna make up my dying bed. Meet me, Jesus, meet me. Won't you meet me in the middle of the air? And if these wings should fail me, Lord, won't you meet me with another pair? Well, 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 won't you meet me, Jesus? Well, 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 Jesus gonna make up my dying. I'm going on down to the river, stick my sword up in the sand. Gonna shout my troubles over, Lord, I done made it to the promised land. Well, 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 I've done crossed over. Well, 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 I've done crossed over. Jesus gonna make up my dying bed. Ever since I've been acquainted with Jesus, we haven't been a minute apart. He placed a receiver in my hand, true religion in my heart. Well, 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 I can ring up my Jesus. Well, 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 I can ring up Jesus. Jesus gonna make up my dying bed. Going on down to the river, stick my sword up in the sand. Gonna shout my troubles over, I've done made it to the promised land. Well, 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 I've done crossed over. Well, 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 Jesus gonna make up my dying bed.
No cotton, though no high cotton can I see. I've been picking low cotton.
Yeah, it's picking low cotton. And we heard Jesus is going to make it my dying bed. And I think we have a caller here.
I'll be glad when the
Do we have our caller here?
I'll be happy as I can be.
Hello.
Hello.
Mr. Douglas Yeager. How are you?
Hey, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. We got Picking Low Cotton in the background, and we're so happy to have you in. on hurdy-gurdy songs. Thank you for joining us today.
Great. Well, that was an important song in Josh's life.
Yes, absolutely. And I want, basically, I wanted to say to you that, introduce you again to our audience by saying that you actually work with Josh White, and you still manage his son, Josh White Jr. Is that correct?
No. I've managed Josh White Jr. for 43 years.
Wow.
And when I started managing him, his mother, who at that time was the widow of Josh White, asked me to represent the estate and to help her out. Josh White had died 7 years prior to that time. I did not work with him, but I feel that, you know, I have been working with him for 43 years, and it has been an honor.
Yes, that's amazing. It's amazing commitment to an artist, and this is one of the things that make you such an amazing, amazing individual in the entire music, folk music, progressive music, political music scene. I do want to get to something though, because most people who do not know Josh White's history, the way you do, I want to get off the script a little bit. So I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball right away. If I may.
Okay.
You know, because, this is just mind boggling. As I mentioned earlier, when you first were telling me about, Josh, my jaw just dropped. How could I not have known about Josh? But my question to you is, we know, you can find out the arc and the incredible trajectory of this artist from his, you know, birth in South Carolina and Greenville, and all the way through the entire 20th century. So many movements, so many people. He's, you know, involved with so many very important historical and cultural figures. I want to just ask you, in the biography, in the history of Josh White, aside from his incredible contributions, what is it that strikes you as being the quintessential truth about this man? Because there's just so much there. So that's my question. What is it for you that has kept this fire of Josh White, a true hurdy-gurdy man, lit?
In my opinion, just studying his life over these years and reading books that have been written about him and interviewing a lot of people that I've done on my own regarding Josh, he's a unique figure in the 20th century. I don't know of any other individual, certainly no celebrity, who the first 16 years of his life were really no different than the movie Roots, which we all saw on TV 30, 40 years ago. He didn't wear shoes till he was 16 years old, or long pants. He didn't have the opportunity of a formal education. He often slept in cotton fields. And in Chicago, it was very cold for a young boy with no shoes or pants as he's leading old blind black street singers across the country. And yet, 10 years later, this same individual was friends of kings and queens, the richest families in America, and the closest black confidant to the president of the United States. It's hard to put those two figures together into the same personality.
Amazing.
And of course, in terms of his music, he was the first musician that the masses ever heard singing folk music, singing blues music. They had never, that music hadn't entered nightclubs in America. And of course, he then became the first to do concert hall tours of it in America and around the world. So he was a very unique individual, a trendsetter. And I think that which made him keep going forward, apart from, obviously, the savant intelligence of a child prodigy,
mm-hmm.
Was that he came up from such difficult times, and he, as someone once, I interviewed once, told me, he always felt he had to be one step of the person behind him who's trying to get to that spot.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone else has slowly creeped up to where Josh was, Josh had to find something new to expand his repertoire, to expand his personality.
What I'm hearing,
and,
yeah, I'm hearing you say is that there was a competitive kind of streak in him as well.
Oh, obviously.
Mm.
And I remember one of the interviewers told me he was like a chameleon. I believe it was actually Jack Landrong, who was a popular folk singer in the early 60s named Jackie Washington.
I see.
And he was a protege of Josh's and spent a lot of time with him. And he would talk about his uniqueness, how he did everything different than any other human being. The way he'd hold his cigarette, the way he'd put it behind his ear, the way he'd hold a drink, the way he would take a drink. And people would say he could walk into a large ballroom with hundreds of people and maybe nobody knew who he was, but everybody would stop and turn around because he had that glowing charismatic aura about him.
Doug.
And, yes.
Douglas, would you please lead us into Strange Fruit?
Okay. When Josh was 7 and leading Blind Man Arnold, this is as the result of his father being beaten and sent into a mental institution for throwing a bill collector out of his house. His father was a minister, and there was no one to support Josh and his younger siblings and his mother, and he went on the road to lead an old blind straight singer, Blind Man Arnold, who sent $2 a week home to his mother, $4 a week, excuse me, and which was considerable money back in 1921. And on one of those trips in Georgia, and they're sleeping in the cotton fields, the old man wakened him, putting his hand over his mouth so he wouldn't scream. And he said, "What is going on there?" He said, "I'm hearing this noise." And of course, he was blind. So Josh looked and he saw the Ku Klux Klan with two black men tarring and feathering them and then lynching them from a tree and then putting hot pokers in their bodies as they're swaying. And this was a moment in his life that he could never forget. And then years later, when Abel Maripol, a social activist writer, showed a song to him, and it was called Strange Fruit, and they have strange fruit hanging down south, bodies hanging from poplar trees and blood at the roots. This affected him greatly. Billie Holiday recorded it first, and she had the big hit initially at the time. And then Josh was the second person to record it. They both frequented and played the Cafe Society. And it was a song that was identified with both of them for the rest of their lives. Josh recorded it 6 different times in his career. And I know his son and daughter, Josh Jr. and Beverly, who used to sing with him in concerts, they would tell me they would stand off stage in the wings when he would perform that song, and they couldn't even look at him because they knew he was visualizing these bodies he saw as a child hanging from the trees as he sang Strange Fruit. And he, unlike Billy, who did it with a band, he did it solo, and it was extremely dramatic song, powerful song.
One of the most powerful songs in American folk and popular music history. Let's take a listen to Strange Fruit. Doug, I know
may I
your
add
time.
May I add one thing?
Please.
One thing, and December 31st, 1999, in the century-ending issue of Time magazine, the editors and publishers chose the greatest, the best, the most important events of the 20th century, and they voted that Strange Fruit was the most important song of the 20th century.
Douglas, thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for joining me. We'll catch up soon, and I really appreciate you sharing some of your insight into Josh White. We could, of course, do this many, many more times, but thank you so much. Let's listen to Strange Fruit.
Thank you, Jorge.
Thank you, Doug.
Southern trees bear a strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black body swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Oh, 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 scene of the gallant South, of the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh, and the sudden smell of burning flesh. For the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, and for the wind to suck, for the sun to rot, for the trees to drop. Wouldn't give me no trial.
judge, he said, "You black boy, 40 years on the hard rock pile. Lord, I'm troubled, troubled. Sure won't make me stay. Lord, I'm troubled, troubled. Jailbreaks do someday. Well, I'm wearing cold iron shackles from my head down to my knees. And that needle keeper, Lord, he's all time kicking me. Well, I went up to the walker, and the head boss too. And I said, please, all you big white folk, won't you see what you can do? Now the sheriff, he winked at the policeman, said, I won't forget you no how. You better come back and see me again, boy, about 40 years from now. Well, I went back to the walker. He looked at me and said, buddy, don't you worry about 40, 'cause in 5 years you'll be dead. Lord, I'm troubled, troubled. Makes me weep and moan. Lord, I'm troubled, troubled. Since the day I was born, Lord, I'm troubled. Jailbreaks do someday. Jailbreaks do someday. Jailbreaks do someday.
Joshua White there with Trouble. Recording from 1940 on Columbia Records. This is Josh White and his Carolinians, popular group that he put together with Bill, Sam, Gary, Carrington, Lewis, and Bayard Rustin, who became a mentor to Martin Luther King Jr., and organized the 63 March on Washington. This group of musicians would then appear in John Henry's very famous play, in which Josh White appeared as well. And John Hammond, on this album, Chain Gang, 1940, had this song, Trouble, which caused a big ruckus down south. And Alan Lomax even coordinated folk song concerts at the White House, which included Josh White and Burl Ives. And some months later, Alan and Mrs. Roosevelt had Josh and the Golden Gate Quartet perform at the Library of Congress. Josh White just gained access to sheer perseverance and talent, an amazing, amazing artist. Before that, we heard, of course, Strange Fruit, which is associated with Billie Holiday. She even had claimed that she had written it. She did not, but she certainly owned that song. But Josh White's minor key version was particularly powerful. Let's listen to another one of Josh White's so-called hits. And it was a hit, in fact, a very influential song to many of the British musicians that would later form the early rock movement from England. Here we go with One Meatball, Josh White.
Josh White Jr.
And Josh White Jr.
Josh, I'd say this boy doesn't look more than 4 years old.
Well, he is. He's 4 years and 2 months.
Not really. Well, I don't know why it is. He doesn't show his age, not a bit. Tell me, Junior, tell me. How's the boy?
Beg pardon?
I said, how's the boy?
I haven't got a boy. I'm not even married.
Well, Well, I should have guessed it. You look very happy. John, how long has this boy been singing?
Quite a while. You know, he's been making CD discs for the boys overseas even when he was 3.5 years old. He knows about 30 songs.
That's amazing. 30? Well, how can a four-year-old boy remember all those songs?
He has a remarkable memory. And
I know the first time you spanked me.
The first time I spanked you?
He remembers that. Ah, he remembers from way back.
Well, Josh Jr., look, how about us, should we sing now, you think?
Yeah.
What?
You are listening to Hurdy Gurdy Songs on Radio Free Brooklyn in Bushwick, New York. Thank you for listening to us. Let's continue our program with One Meatball.
The little man walked up and down. He found the eating place in town. He read the manual front row. Today was 15 cents could do. One meatball. One meatball. He could afford but one meatball.
He told the waiter near at hand, take it for dinner he had planned.
To get what started, one and all, to hear that waiter loudly call.
What?
One meatball.
I like to hear you.
One meatball.
Hey, this here gent wants one meatball. The little man felt ill at ease, you got it?
Professor, if you please, the waiter down the hall, you get no bread with one. One meatball.
I like to hear you, darling.
One meatball.
Well, you get no bread with one meatball.
There is a house in New Orleans they call the Rising Sun, and it's been of many poor girls and me. Oh Lord, I'm one. Now if I had to listen to what my mama said, I'd have been at home today. But being so young and foolish, oh Lord, I let her ran. My baby. sister. Don't do what I've done. Please shun that house in New Orleans. They call
Josh White first heard House of the Rising Sun by a white Appalachian in the early 1930s. In 1940, when Alan Lomax was writing for the national radio show Back Where I Come From, with Josh, Woody Guthrie, Lead Belly, Burl Ives, and the Golden State Quartet, he suggested that they do the song. Subsequently, within that same year, Josh, Lead Belly, and Woody all recorded their versions of the song. Unlike Woody and Lead Belly, Josh slowed it down to a lament, put it in a minor key, and sang it as if he was the woman living this hellish life. His version was the one got the most airplay and made the song famous around the world.
It's a downright rotten, low-down, dirty shame. It's a downright rotten, low-down, dirty shame. You mistreat me, baby, God knows I'm not to blame. Well, it's jelly, 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 jelly stays on my mind. Hey, Lordy mama, great God almighty, jelly, 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 jelly stays on my mind. Jelly roll, kill my mammy, slap my pappy, stone blind. I'm gonna take you, baby, stretch you across my big brass bed.
Is that you, Elijah?
It is. That sounds very much like Josh singing Jelly Jelly.
It sure is. It sure is. Billy Eckstein, Earl Hines, 1945, 46. Is that correct?
That's actually wrong.
Please correct us.
It's a completely different song from the Eckstein Hines Jelly Jelly.
Oh.
They both had that title, but they're not related.
Not totally unrelated tracks. Oh, very good. Who composed this version of Jelly? Was it Josh?
It's his reworking of some floating verses. My memory is the closest thing was from Walter Davis.
Oh.
But the Eckstein Hines is not 12 Bar Blues.
Excellent, excellent point. Which makes me ask you this question. First of all, welcome, Elijah. Welcome to Hurdy Gurdy Songs. Thank you for taking time. For our audience, of course, Elijah Wald is the biographer of note of record of Josh White's book he called Society Blues, and many other incredible publications. Dave Van Ronk. I mean, I could just go on, but we're focusing on Josh White. Definitely a hurdy-gurdy man, a storyteller of a unique individual. Elijah, let me ask you a question, something I've been wondering. First of all, welcome again, but let me ask you this question about Josh's influence on so many musicians. Like, I picked out, of course, like something along the lines of Mean Mistreater, you know, Johnny Winter doing a version of Mean Mistreater. I think of Janis's Ball and Chain, which she says she learned it from No More Ball and Chain. Can you talk a little bit about the kind of blues?
Honestly, I don't think the Janis Joplin one holds up. I'd have to check, but I think that's also a different song. But, you know, the thing I would say is, first of all, for, you know, like Dave Van Rock is a perfect example of somebody who completely cited Josh White as his main influence. But I think limiting it to blues really, really misses it because he was the folk guitar stylist who invented modern folk guitar. I mean, all the fingerstyle guitar playing that we later get in people, I mean, perfect example is Joan Baez, who picked up her style from Bill Woods, if you've ever seen that old album,
yes.
Folk Singers Around Harvard Square, with Joan Baez and Bill Woods. And Bill Woods was a Josh White imitator.
Why was he such a virtuoso, though? Where did it come from? Because, yes, you can sense that even as a young boy, he picked up this incredible technique from these teachers, his mentors. But,
right.
I'm sorry.
And what he did that was unusual was he then... the funny thing is that what sort of got him written out of history was that he was described as being too slick and not a real blues guy.
Right, right.
And
he didn't have the rawness.
Well, he had the rawness when he was young, but the thing was he came to New York when he was about, I forget, 19 or 20 years old and lived there for the rest of his life. He was a young guy when he moved up there. He became a star on the folk scene and he was a folk singer. And so he took a guitar style that had been formed in the world of people like Gary Davis and William Walker, who nobody remembers, but there was a whole South Carolina world of guitar virtuosos. And he took that style and applied it to things like Barbara Allen and Molly Malone and, you know, all these English ballads and new compositions coming out of Tin Pan Alley. And became, you know, the guy who, when Pete Seeger and the Almanac Singers went to make their first albums, they brought him in as a ringer, as the one guitar player in town who could play all that repertoire.
Wow. Wow. I mean, he was certainly a better guitar player than Woody.
Well, he was a very different... I mean, Woody was a hell of a good guitar player, but not for ballads.
Right, right. And that's an important distinction to make.
And, you know, Josh then becomes the person who everyone, be it Burt Alive, be it Richard Dyer Bennett, they're all in this world where they're following Josh White. And I don't just mean that on guitar. I mean, he pioneers that in the nightclubs, and they all follow him into the nightclub world.
How did he break into the clubs, into that society, that cafe society?
That's a fascinating story. Basically, Cafe Society, when it opened, was the showcase for John Hammond's Spirituals to Swing concerts. They had just happened at Carnegie Hall, giving the history of black music in one concert. And Barney Josephson at Cafe Society booked those acts then as regular nightclub acts. And then what happened was he had the Golden Gate Quartet, who were the most famous gospel quartet of that moment, and he opened a second room uptown and moved them uptown and needed a gospel group and went to Josh, who had performed in a Broadway show with Paul Robeson, and said, "Can you pull together a gospel group?" And Josh teamed up with a guy named Leonard DePore, who had been the music director for the Robeson show. And they pulled together a group which, interestingly enough, had... my mind just went completely blank. The guy who organized the March on Washington. Bayard Rustin.
Bayard Rustin. I mentioned him earlier. Yes.
Yeah. And so Josh came into Cafe Society with the Carolinian. And then... on John Hammond's urging, he made the record of Chain Gang Songs, also still with the Carolinians. And then
that's where we played, he proved that
he could hold a nightclub audience, and they brought him in as a solo, and he was at Cafe Society every night for 4 years.
Amazing, amazing. He simply
defined the black folk singer, which was how he was built. I mean, he was not built as a blues singer.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And it's the other thing that strikes me so unique is, like, fast forward somewhat into, like, Jack Holzman taking him as an artist on his label. That's just such a unique leap. Because it comes back to this thing about, like, the covers, these covers of, like Josh White does The House I Live In, and you think of Sinatra, you know, a standard that's one of Sinatra's, you know, evergreens as well. You know, that's the epitome of, like, white mainstream society, Sinatra. And yet,
well, but let's get that.
But the
one
songs
way,
are
way
so
around.
Different. The songs
Sinatra
are so different.
Sinatra was covering Josh White.
That's exactly right. But the audiences, yeah. I mean, I'm wondering about how you see the reception of the different audiences, the white audience and the black audience to this.
Oh, but those weren't different audiences. Josh had an entirely white audience. Josh had no black audience.
That's what I'm alluding to.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think the easiest way to think of Josh moving a little bit forward is he was the direct model for Harry Belafonte.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Down to Belafonte dressing like Josh and starting out simply covering Josh's repertoire.
Well, that smoldering sexuality was a part of the brand.
Absolutely. 100%. And, you know, he was on Broadway. He got movie roles. You know, he was very much the black I mean, that's what Cafe Society was. I mean, Cafe Society was black performers for a largely white, largely upper middle class audience, with the important caveat that it was explicitly a not segregated room.
Mm.
I mean, the black customers were also people who were pretty well off. But, I mean, you know, that's where Adam Clayton Powell held his wedding reception.
Wow, that's amazing. Elijah, can you please lead us into Johnny Has Gone for a Soldier?
You know, nothing particular to say on that one, except it's a really good example of what we've just been talking about, that it's, you know, it's Josh doing his folk singer thing and trying to be socially conscious. And, you know, he's part of that world with the Weavers and Pete Seeger and that world. And putting him in the blues world isn't wrong exactly, but it misunderstands really what made him huge in the moment he was huge.
Let's take a little bit of a listen to Johnny, okay? And we'll come right back with Elijah Wald.
I sat on Buttermilk Hill, and who can blame me, crying my fill? Every tear could turn a mill. Johnny has gone for a soldier. Me, oh my, I loved him so. It broke my heart to see him go. And only time can heal my woe. Johnny has gone for a soldier. I'll sell my flax and I'll sell my wheat.
Well, that is that song as a hurdy-gurdy song, so to speak. Is that an anti-war song?
Well, it certainly was presented that way, yeah. I mean, musically, that's a fascinating piece because he's playing jazz chords behind it.
And he has a cellist with him, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good reminder that, you know, the Weavers had their hits with Gordon Jenkins' orchestra,
right.
and we're also following what really broke folk into the pop world was a folk album by Joe Stafford. You know, the jazz singer with the Dorsey Orchestra, along with Frank Sinatra. I mean,
it's as mainstream
Josh
as you can
very
get.
Very much is part of that world as well. That sort of cafe jazz.
Right, cafe. That's right. That's right. That's. Elijah, I wish we had so much more time, but can you lead us into the other track that we talked about briefly? I Left a Good Deal in Mobile. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And with that, we'll let you go, but thank you so much for calling in.
Left a Good Deal in Mobile. Basically, what happened there was he did two songs with Mary Lou Williams. As I remember, the other one was a straight-up World War II song.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was in the jazz world, but he knew that he was not going to be a major jazz singer. But every once in a while, I mean, actually one of his earliest records for the folk scene had Sidney Bechet on clarinet. So he regularly, you know, he was at Cafe Society with jazz people. He jammed with jazz people there all the time. And once in a while, he got to make a record with a jazz person. And this is Mary Lou Williams. It's a terrific record.
I Left a Good Deal in Mobile. Josh White. Thank you, Elijah Wald, for calling in. So appreciative and appreciate your knowledge and your deep connection to Josh White. And we'll follow up on Josh White Jr. As we continue this exploration into the music of Josh White. Thank you so much, Elijah.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.
I've been everywhere, I've done everything, from building planes to hauling steel. But since I left home, I've been on my own, needing you like a home-cooked meal. Oh, it's too bad I ever left my hometown, left a good deal in Mobile. Oh, why did I leave there? I can't believe there's a train on the track. I'd give a great stack to hop a freight back, but if I should, it won't do me no good. Bought me a car to go where you are, with initials on the steering wheel. I wrote you and Jack, both letters came back. I guess you know the way I feel. Yes, it's too bad I ever left my hometown, left a